Did I leave the iPad back here?
Nope.
Where is the iPad? Well. Well, I looked up there and I didn't see the iPad, and it was sitting right there. And I thought I'd lost it. Oh me. Oh, good grief. Apple is got me trapped. It's not letting me out. Let's see if we can get past this. Okay, I think maybe finally we're there. Just a quick reminder, if you wanted hard copies of lessons 2, 3, and 4, I'd sent out and provided hard copies for lesson 1 recently on Wednesday, so you could get it there. Well, this is not a very auspicious start to our class. I'm having all kinds of problems today. Okay. You'll be patient with me. I'm going to reboot this iPad. We are ready for lesson 1. Today in our Acts study. Let's see if we can get this thing going again. It's been the day for electronics. What we're going to do this morning is introduce the book of Acts, and we'll be looking at authorship, date of writing, the recipient of the book, and we'll try to spend some time surveying the book, particularly in terms of its structure. And let's see if I can get my slides to come up. That's not going to work. If you'll pardon me for just a moment, I'm going to bring up my slides on this computer and perhaps I can use this computer to follow what I'm doing. My apologies for the disorganization here. Where's Debbie? She's not in the class, so she must be responsible for this. Well, I don't believe this. Okay, I think we're getting there. Now what I'll have to try to do is make sure I can coordinate these two. What I want to do, first of all, is talk a little bit about authorship. And in terms of authorship, the thing that is very helpful, and this is in your notes, is the fact that in the book of Acts, the author includes himself as a traveling companion with the Apostle Paul in three different sections in Acts. If you've had the chance to read through that first lesson, you've noticed the references there. But just to kind of give you a visual of that, those are the 28 chapters of Acts. There's the first, what's sometimes called a we section. He says we instead of he or Paul or them. The second section here in chapter 20 and verse 5 and through verse 18 of chapter 21. And then finally, when the journey of Paul begins in chapter 27, verse 1, really I think that we section ends through runs through the end of the book, that the author of Acts stayed with Paul in his Roman imprisonment, because at the end of the book, he actually talks about how long Paul was in prison. But the last reference, first person plural reference, is in verse 16. So the author is a traveling companion of Paul. Well, Paul traveled with a number of different individuals. In the we sections, there are individuals who are named. And while this isn't definitive, it seems unlikely that the author would be one of the persons named in those we sections. He would talk about himself in the first person as he does, first person plural. Here are some of the names that you'll see in those sections, those we sections. Silas, Sopater, Aristarchus, Secundus, Gaius, Timothy, Tychicus, and Trophimus. So it's very unlikely that any of them are the author of Acts. Paul, while he is in Rome, writes four epistles, the prison epistles, Ephesians, Colossians, Philippians, and Philemon. And it's most likely that the author of Acts is one of the persons that he mentions in those prison epistles. Well, who are those people? Mark, Jesus Justus, Epaphras, Demas, Luke, and Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus was a messenger of the Philippians who came to Paul in Rome bringing a gift from the Philippian church. Probably not Demas. Why? Say again? Yeah, he loved the world, went back into the world apparently, it seems. So it's very unlikely it's Demas. Luke is the best possibility. The fact of the matter is, you've got a connection between two books, Luke. Oh, this is going to be so much fun. You've got a connection between Acts and Luke. They circulated together early in the history of the church in manuscripts. You'll see Luke and Acts together. And it's obvious from the introduction both to Luke and to Acts that those two books were written by the same person. That doesn't help us as much as far as the authorship of Luke, but it does help us with the authorship of Acts, because the Gospel of Luke was recognized early on as being written by Luke. We don't know a lot about Luke. We know he was a physician. He's mentioned as one in Colossians. I love this. In Colossians 4:14, he's mentioned in Philemon verse 24, very short book. And he's mentioned also in 2 Timothy 4:11. Now, that's not one of the four prison epistles of Paul's first imprisonment. But there is something said there about Luke and him being with Paul. And I'm sorry, I'm trying to coordinate two different slide presentations and it's not working very well. Luke is evidently the best possibility for authorship. Now, when Paul wrote how many epistles of the New Testament? Yeah, 13. That's a Bible drill class question. 13. If he wrote Hebrews, that would be 14. But there's some doubt about whether he wrote Hebrews. Why? You might know. It was accepted as an epistle of Paul early on, at least in the Western Church. But then there were questions later about whether Paul actually wrote it. Why?
He claims to have written in the actual letters. He says this is from Paul, and Hebrews does not have that in it.
Okay. He says in one epistle, I think it's in 2 Thessalonians, I write with my own hand. Because in 2 Thessalonians 2, it seems like there was some question about people sending an epistle as though it were from Paul. Somebody's writing under his name. Paul says, this is my handwriting. But more importantly, yeah, Ralph?
I can only tell you what I've heard from somebody else. His style of writing and maybe some words that he used are not consistent with his others.
Well, no, that's true. Hebrews seems to have a Greek that is of a higher quality. It's a different style than you typically find in the epistles of Paul. But here's something that's very telling, and that is that when Paul writes an epistle, he identifies himself. You notice that in the first of the epistle, he'll call himself Paul, an apostle, and a servant of Jesus Christ, or Paul, the prisoner of Jesus Christ. Hebrews doesn't have that. Hebrews just has a quick introduction that begins talking about the position, the nature of Jesus Christ in the very beginning of the book, the first three verses of the book. As far as date of authorship, see if I can catch up here. One of the key events of the first century is the destruction of Jerusalem. Why would that be? Okay, it involved the destruction of the temple. One of the key issues in the early church was the relationship of Christians, particularly Gentile Christians, but Jewish as well, to the law of Moses. And that question is addressed by Paul in Galatians. It's addressed to some extent in Romans. Okay, you'll see it even in 2 Corinthians in the latter part of the book. But once the temple is destroyed, that question is going to not be a big issue anymore. And so it's interesting, there's no mention of the destruction of Jerusalem in the book of Acts, something that it seems very likely that Luke would have mentioned had it already taken place. And so that kind of tends to make us think that the authorship was pushed back. We know that Acts is the sequel to Luke, and so Luke has to be written prior to Acts. Acts ends with Paul in prison. He's in the rented house for 2 years, but we're not told what the resolution of his case before the emperor is. We don't know if he was released. We don't know what happened to him, although there is some evidence that Paul traveled again. Does anybody know why anybody would think that? That Paul actually was released from prison, this Roman imprisonment, and then traveled some more? Anybody know? The books of 1 Timothy and Titus are typically attributed to Paul after his Roman imprisonment, the first imprisonment, the one that Acts talks about. And the reason for that is there are people and places that do not match Paul's travels in Acts. And so the conclusion that's held by a lot of Bible students is that those books reflect travels that Paul engaged in after he was released from imprisonment in Rome, the imprisonment of Acts chapter 28. Okay? And so it's very likely that he was released, but Luke doesn't tell us that. Now, if it was written after 63, it seems likely that Luke would have given us that information. And so typically, AD 63 is the date that's suggested. We know that Acts and Luke are together because in Acts 1, verse 1, the author writes, "In the first book, O Theophilus, I have dealt with all that Jesus began to do and teach." So you go back to Luke, and Luke is the book that mentions Theophilus here in Luke chapter 1 and verse 3. He is addressed as most excellent Theophilus. What's the significance of that? It just means that he was a really good guy, or what? Ralph's not buying that. Yes, Kathy? Well, I'm sorry? Well, even more than just Roman. A Roman official, yeah. Governors or Roman officials were often referred to as most excellent. In fact, you even see that in the book of Acts, where in the narrative, Paul's appearing before two governors, Roman governors there in Caesarea. The first one was Felix, the second one was Festus. Most excellent Theophilus indicates that probably Theophilus was a Roman official. This is wild. And he's the one who received the gospel, and then Acts is the sequel to that. All right, let's talk a little bit about the purpose of Acts. Most of us are pretty familiar with Acts. It's one of the easier books to study. It's historical narrative in much of it. What's the purpose of that? Purpose of the book. Any ideas? Yeah, Nate?
To spread the church.
Okay, to show the spread of the church. In fact, if you were to go to the first chapter here, let me see if I can get up everything here. If you go to the first chapter in verse 8, this is Jesus speaking to his disciples, the apostles, just prior to his ascension. He says, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth." And that's not a bad summary of what happens in the book of Acts. You've got the gospel beginning in Jerusalem. In Acts 2, you've got the apostles preaching on the day of Pentecost. And the gospel will move out from there into Samaria in chapter 8. Very good. And then in chapter 11, it goes up into Syria, Antioch. That's a record of the church at Antioch beginning. And Paul's work will take the gospel to the west as far as Corinth, Greece, and eventually to Rome. And Paul's plan, as he talks about in Romans 15, is to go to Spain once he has visited the Christians in Rome. That didn't turn out the way that he had anticipated, but that was his plan. So when you divide the book, you can divide the book in the simplest manner by just dividing it into two pieces, two halves. Not quite half. Any ideas how you would do that? Who seems to be the main character in the beginning of Acts? Yeah, it seems like we're following Peter here. But what about the rest of the apostles? Well, the Acts of the Apostles is the title that's given to the book, but really we know very little about what most of the apostles were doing. We know they're mentioned from time to time. We know they were scattered. But really this book focuses on Peter and also in the second part of the book on Paul. Up until chapter 12, we're dealing mainly with Peter. Now I understand, of course, we're introduced to Saul of Tarsus in what chapter? Okay, the end of chapter 7. And then chapter 8 begins to follow his persecution as he's persecuting Christians. He's going to be, in chapter 9, on his way to Damascus to bind Christians there in the synagogues, bring them back to Jerusalem to be punished. Chapter 9 records the conversion of Paul and some of his early travels as a Christian. But really, you don't begin to follow Paul as a main character until what chapter? Well, chapter 13. 13 is the beginning of the first missionary journey. All the missionary journeys are going to begin from the same place. What is that place? Where do all the missionary journeys begin? Good. Antioch of Syria. Antioch of Syria. And so from that point on, we're really following the life of Paul as he preaches his work as a gospel teacher. Now, if you look up on the screen there, I hit the wrong thing. Sorry about that. If you look on the right-hand side there, there's the breakdown of the Acts 1 through 12 and 13 through 28. On the left-hand side, there's another division of the book of Acts. It's a little more complicated, but I think there's good evidence that it's intentional. It's divided into six sections. What's interesting or common about each of those sections is that each section ends essentially with some statement about the growth of the church, the growth of the gospel, the spreading of the gospel. It's as though, as Nate said, the theme of Acts or the purpose of Acts is to show the spread of the gospel. And so you've got these six sections. And at the end of each section, there's a verse. It's in the notes in lesson one. There's a verse there that talks about the fact that many other believers were being added, that the word was increasing greatly. Things like that are said. I think that's not accidental. I think that's Luke's intention as far as his purpose in writing the book. So Acts, obviously, to demonstrate the spreading of the gospel, the growth of the church. But I think there's another purpose that we could probably talk about, and there's some information about that in lesson one there, and that is to commend Christianity to the Roman government. We need to remember that Luke, the same person, writes both the gospel and Acts. And there's a commonality between those two books with reference to this purpose. For instance, in the gospel, Luke seems to be very concerned with showing that Jesus was proclaimed to be innocent by Roman officials. Luke's gospel records at least four affirmations by Pilate, and by Herod Agrippa, Herod Antipas, that Jesus is innocent. Why would he be concerned about that? Why would he be concerned about that? I mean, everybody knows, right? Well, let's just say that you're preaching the gospel someplace, and you're talking about the person who is your Savior. And then you tell people, well, he was crucified on a Roman cross. Well, what are people going to think? He must have been a criminal. In fact, he must have been a horrible criminal, because crucifixion was reserved typically for slaves and for those who were kind of the lower part of society or the worst kind of criminals. And here we are, we're preaching a gospel in which our king is a crucified man. And so what Luke wants to do is he wants to show Theophilus, remember who his recipient is, both of the gospel and Acts, obviously the original recipient. The books were written for others as well, but the original recipient in both cases was this Roman official. And the question of the relationship of Christianity to the Roman government is going to become a big question, isn't it? In the latter part of the first century, certainly into the beginning of the second century. And so Luke shows an interest in the gospel in proclaiming that Jesus was innocent. Pontius Pilate says it. Herod Antipas, to whom Pilate had sent Jesus, makes the observation, or I should say Pilate makes the observation, that Herod found nothing worthy of death in him. And so, like the apologists, early Christian writers later, after the first century, who would defend Christianity against some of the charges that pagans would make against the church or against Christians, Luke is defending the innocence of Jesus. He wasn't put to death because he was a criminal. Okay? Do you remember in Paul's first epistle to the Corinthians what he says about the Jews and the Greeks with reference to Christ crucified? To the Jews, Christ crucified is a, good, somebody said it, stumbling block. Why? Well, Christ is their Messiah, their King, their anointed one from the Old Testament. And here are people preaching in this gospel that the anointed King of this kingdom is a crucified individual. To the Jews, that's a stumbling block for a couple of reasons. One, it makes Jesus sound like a criminal, like he's weak. But secondly, it was contrary to the perception that they have had of the kingdom that was to come. They saw Jesus as going to be this physical king who was going to rule with power, overthrow the Roman domination, and Israel would be free again, be their own sovereign nation like they were back in the time of David and Solomon. Okay, that's the gospel. But now when you get to, and I'm again behind, I apologize, I'm not doing this very well. If you look at Acts, he does the same thing in Acts, although now he's talking about the innocence of Paul. In Acts 18 and verse 14, do you recall that there were Jews who brought Paul before the judgment seat of Gallio? This is in Corinth. What was Gallio's response? I think I put the verse in the notes there in lesson one. Gallio, does Gallio hear the case? Why not? Anybody remember? Say again. No crimes that Gallio was interested in. He said, if it's a matter of your laws and traditions, then you see to that. Gallio's not interested in their religious accusations. And that statement says that Gallio recognized they weren't making any kind of accusation that involved a crime against the Roman government or against Roman law. You see that? So he refuses to hear the case. Claudius Lysias. Who's Claudius Lysias? Anybody remember?
The Roman commander.
Good. He's the Roman commander in Jerusalem who rescues Paul in chapter 21 of Acts when there was a mob in the temple courtyard and they were beating Paul. They would have killed him, I think, had not the Roman soldiers with this commander come down into the courtyard. There were steps that went led from the fortress Antonia down into this courtyard, the court of the Gentiles around the actual sanctuary and the closer courts. And so he comes down into the courtyard and rescues Paul. Chapter 22 is Paul speaking from the steps to the people, and they listen to him as he speaks to them in the Hebrew language until he uses the G word. What's the G word? Gentiles. Paul says, God said to me in a vision, I'm sending you to the Gentiles. Oh, that's it. We're done listening. None of that, you know. And so the soldiers have to carry Paul into the fortress to protect him. Claudius Lysias, in chapter 23, probably this would be useful for us to take a look at this and read the specific verse. Claudius Lysias is going to send Paul to Caesarea because a plot had been made against Paul by the Jews. Over 40 Jews had said, we're not going to eat or drink until we've killed Paul. And when Claudius Lysias hears about that, we won't go into all the details, but once he hears about that, he arranges to have Paul sent to Caesarea, where the governor is located, and he sends a letter along with him. Okay? Here's the letter. This is in beginning in verse 26 of Acts 23. Claudius Lysias, to the most excellent governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be killed by them. Coming with the troops, I rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman. Claudius kind of played a little fast and loose with the truth, didn't he? What actually happened? Anybody recall? Yeah. Good. He doesn't know, Claudius Lysias doesn't know Paul's a Roman citizen until he's already bound Paul and they're preparing to flog him to get the truth about what's going on here. Claudius Lysias didn't know that Paul was a Roman citizen, and he certainly didn't rescue him because he was a Roman citizen. But Claudius is protecting himself. You remember the response of the soldiers when Paul says, is it lawful, as Robert said, is it lawful for you to beat a Roman citizen uncondemned? They go to the commander and say, be careful what you're going to do here. Because that was against Roman law. And he could be in a lot of trouble if they'd gone ahead and done that. In fact, those who were preparing to beat, they kind of made themselves scarce. But now Claudius has an opportunity to kind of cover this faux pas on his part, this almost mistake, by claiming that he knew that Paul was a Roman citizen and that's why he'd come down into the temple courtyard and rescued him from the Gentiles. He's a soldier, but he's also a politician. Okay. And when I wanted to know the reason they accused him, I brought him before their council. I found out that he was accused concerning questions of their law, but had nothing charged against him deserving of death or chains. And when it was told me that the Jews lay in wait for the man, I sent him immediately to you and also commanded his accusers to state before you the charges against him. So Claudius Lysias says, I can't find anything that he's guilty of. If you go to Acts 25 and 25, Festus says basically the same thing. And finally, Festus, who put himself in between a rock and a hard place by suggesting to Paul that he should, that he was asking him, would he be willing to go to Jerusalem and be tried before the Jews there? Paul knows that's a death sentence. He's not going to get a fair hearing in Jerusalem. So instead, he avails himself of his right as a Roman citizen and appeals to Caesar. Well, that puts Festus in a bad spot because now, by law, he needs to send Paul to Rome, to the emperor. But what's the charge? What's he going to write to the emperor? I'm sending Paul to you because he did what? Festus doesn't have anything to write. And so in chapter 26 of Acts, Paul makes his defense before Festus and King Agrippa II and Bernice, his sister, because Festus hopes that Agrippa will find something that Paul says that he can put in a letter to the emperor and make it sound worthwhile to send Paul to Rome, okay? But in that course of events, look at chapter 26, 31, and 32. Agrippa says, this man could have been set free. He's not guilty of any crime. So here's my point. In both the gospel and Luke, in Acts rather, Luke seems to be concerned about showing, first of all, that Jesus wasn't guilty of any crime. He wasn't crucified because he was an evildoer. That's important when you're trying to teach people about Jesus being the Christ, the Son of God. And he also talks about Paul's innocence and affirmed by Roman officials. All right, we need to move along here. I want to talk about another purpose of Acts. And that is that Acts is what we could describe as a bridge book. There's a quotation there by Everett Harrison that I think is a good explanation of this. He writes, "Without the book of Acts, it would be hard to make sense out of the New Testament. The Gospels end with the resurrection and ascension of Jesus Christ. The epistles, mostly by Paul, he wrote 13 epistles, are largely doctrinal in nature with only an occasional biographical or historical reference." So we ask all sorts of questions. What did the apostles do after the ascension? When was the church founded? Who was Paul, the writer of all these epistles? How were the churches established to which the New Testament letters were written? These and other questions are answered by the book of Acts. And he says, Acts provides an account of the origin and early development of the Christian church and serves as an historical bridge between the Gospels and epistles. Hebrews has been described as a bridge book between the Old Testament and the New Testament, because Hebrews, in talking about the superiority of Jesus Christ and specifically his priesthood, his sacrifice, you begin to understand the connection between the Old Testament, the types and shadows that the Hebrew writer mentions in chapter 10 and verse 1, and the New Covenant. So Hebrews is kind of that bridge book that helps you make sense of how these two things are connected. Acts does the same thing. Acts is a bridge book in that it helps you make sense of the stuff that's going on in the Gospels with what we find in the epistles. Colossians. Who are the Colossians? Or better yet, why is there a church? When did that church start? And on, all the questions that you could ask as a result of what you read in the epistles, Acts explains all that. And so it's that bridge book that kind of links those things together. All right. This has been an absolute chaotic presentation. I apologize for that. We'll have to figure out what's going on with the technology here. But maybe somebody has a question, and this would be a good time for us to stop and answer questions. Anybody? Ralph, comment?
Not so much a question. Mm-hmm. Paul was uniquely qualified to do the task God chose him to do because of his Roman citizenship. Eventually, I think that was what God's plan was for him to go to Rome. That propagated the gospel even more throughout the empire. So his qualification as a Pharisee and his upbringing, his teaching, but eventually to getting it to Rome, I think that was unique to him. I don't know how many Jews could have had.
Yeah, I really am unaware of how broad Roman citizenship was in the New Testament world, although I'm sure it was somewhat of a minority, and certainly even more so am I uncertain about among the Jews how many might have been Roman citizens. But your point is well taken. He is uniquely qualified to be an apostle to the Gentiles. As he related there in chapter 22, God said, I'm going to send you to the Gentiles. Well, he's an individual who is familiar with Gentile society. You see that in Acts 17, the culture of the Gentiles. But he's also uniquely qualified to deal with Jews. He's a Roman citizen, so he has this access to the emperor. Although it's kind of interesting, if you look in Romans 15, Paul says to the Romans, Romans was written from Corinth just prior to the beginning of the return leg of Paul on his third missionary journey, which incidentally, just a quick footnote, we're going to try to link the epistles that Paul wrote with the narrative of Acts. I'd like for us to be able or to be familiar with when epistles were written, at least as much as we can. There are some, Galatians, for example, where maybe the date or the place of writing is not as clear. But there are other epistles, a number of the epistles, where we can put them in the narrative of Acts, in the chronology of Paul's life, or I should say the history of Paul's life. That brings up another point. Acts is not a chronicle. Acts is a history. A chronicle seeks to just record events in some sort of chronological timeline. The events may not be necessarily related to each other. There may not be any intention of promoting or identifying a theme or causes. But a history is a record, a selected record. And that's what Acts is. Acts doesn't talk about all the Acts of the Apostles. It doesn't even mention most of the Apostles, hardly, except in the very beginning. Instead, Luke is picking out events that fit his purpose in writing. And that purpose, as Nate indicated earlier, is to demonstrate the spread of the gospel. He doesn't even record everything that Paul did, right? How do we know that? A couple of things. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul says, and this happened to me, and this happened to me, and this happened. And he's talking about things that Luke didn't even record. Paul, at that point, he writes 2 Corinthians from Macedonia on his third missionary journey, still on the leg toward Corinth. These things had already happened, but they weren't recorded by Luke in Acts. Paul writes to the Corinthians in his second letter that he's coming to visit them for the third time. Those of you who were in the 2 Corinthians class some months ago may recall that the first time Paul goes to Corinth is on his second missionary journey when he establishes the church there. He goes and preaches there and a church is established. Another time is after 2 Corinthians, when he goes to Corinth on his third missionary journey. That's two times. But in 2 Corinthians, twice, hopefully the numbers aren't confusing, but Paul says twice, I'm coming to you for the third time. When was that third visit? It appears that it was during the time that he was at Ephesus. He was at Ephesus on his third missionary journey for how long? 3 years, very good. 3 years. And during that time, he apparently made a trip, a short trip, over to Corinth and then back to Ephesus. It didn't go well. He talks about it in 2 Corinthians 1 and 2, and for that matter in chapter 7 as well. That was a trip. That would make Paul's visit after 2 Corinthians the third time. But Luke doesn't say anything about that trip. Because Luke's purpose is not to tell everything that Paul did or to tell everything that the apostles did. It is to be selective about the events and record those events that fit his purpose in showing the spread of the gospel, and I think some other purposes as well. Very good comment, Ralph. Anybody else? Yeah, Ed?
Gloss over their problems either.
No.
It was a pretty accurate story, I would say.
Yeah, just a quick addendum to what you're saying, Ed, that Luke doesn't gloss over some of the weaknesses or the frailties, the sins of even Roman officials. When Paul makes his defense before Felix, the Jews come with their orator, Tertullus, and Tertullus says, oh, you've done so much for the Jewish people, and we've lived in peace because of your, you know, governorship and everything. The fact of the matter is, Felix was a governor for, I think, 8 years, and he was a lousy governor. He was a terrible governor. When Paul addresses Felix, he says, I acknowledge that you've been a governor for a long time. He doesn't use flattery on Felix. And Luke records that. Whereas Festus, he deals with Festus differently. Good point. I think I heard a second buzzer, right? Okay. My apologies. We'll see if we can work out some of these technological difficulties before Wednesday. We're going to continue in lesson 2, which is the first chapter of Acts. If you don't have... let me back up and say, if you have not received digital copies of the syllabus in the first 4 lessons, if you'll just write me an email or a text, I'll make sure that you get that information. If you signed up for the class prior to the class beginning, then you should have gotten the digital copies, because I made a list off of that sign-up list so that I could send out digital copies of the lessons. There are some hard copies at the back if you want to use them. Okay? Till Wednesday.